hour two of Canuck Central. Safiar Shaw and Vic Nazar. This hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by BC Liquor. Until June 28th, save $6 on Eccentric Cabernet Sauvignon and Coors Light 24-packs. Visit your nearest BC Liquor location today. Enjoy responsibly. We are going to have Kevin Woodley join us, as he always does, on Wednesdays coming up in a couple of moments. And we're getting ready for Game 1 of Oilers Stars and Game 4 between the Texas Stars and your Abbey Canucks, who can take a commanding 3-1 series lead in the Western Conference final as they try to get to the final in the Calder Cup playoff in the AHL. And the big story has been Artur Shelob's pick and his play between the pipes. And again, I know people get ahead of themselves often. As soon as a player plays well, it's like, what does this mean big picture? But remove all that, and more than anything, just for him individually, seeing him bounce back after a tough start to the year and show that he still has that form, he can flash that form, I do think is very encouraging.
Yeah, just because it didn't initially work the season at the NHL level doesn't mean you just write off the whole season, right? Can you still find a win? Can you still have some, any sort of linear progression to your career arc? And so having a minor bump is still some progress here. So the fact that he's having this type of run, hey, that's a big feather in his cap. It's just a matter of, is it going to translate to the big level?
Yeah, and that's going to be the big question. And Woodley's going to join us here coming up in a second on the hotline powered by Power West Industries. And Kevin Woodley is a presentation of White Rock Hyundai, who now joins us. What is going on, Woodley? How's your vehicle treating you these days?
Vehicle's treating me great. I'm actually over at the hockey shop right now, just setting up a little virtual reality goaltending, trying to channel my inner Artur Shelobs. You know,
nice
saves and some beauties that'll slide across the imaginary crease and make some incredible saves, all that kind of stuff. I'm practically in the NHL right now, boy.
You're practically Artur Shelobs. And you bring up Shelobs. How encouraging is what he's doing? Like, how out of this world has he been? How fortunate? Like, what do you make of his run so far, which has been tremendous?
Okay, so I feel like I need to not walk back, but add some context, because I've been asked this question a few times. And based on the responses I'm getting online to what I'm saying, people feel I'm being way too negative. And it's probably true, because what he's doing is remarkable. It's fantastic. And maybe it's just the contrarian nature of myself, but some of the pushback I've had to it is basically based on the widespread assumptions I see because of this small sample performance, that A, he's ready for the NHL and he has to be in the NHL, and that B, there's no way they lose him on waivers. And I don't believe that either one are true, especially with where this team is at. Doesn't mean he's not ready for the NHL, but given how last year went, I still have a tough time seeing this team with their intentions for the upcoming season going with him. Like, it's hard for me to see that. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're seeing very specific steps that say this will absolutely translate. Last year is a thing of the past. He's learned some new things and he's going to be ready and he's an NHL goalie. That's entirely possible. At the end of the day, he's performing at an exceptional clip in the toughest time of the year, which is the playoffs. And we've seen this before, world championships or the playoffs last year. He's capable of this. He's got incredible athleticism. He's still exceptionally young. He rises to the occasion in big moments. There is a ton to love about what Artur Shelobs is doing here. And so maybe my past couple of appearances here on other shows have been too negative. I worry about that, because the truth is, there was a time not that long ago when I had people in the organization asking me if I saw what Ian Clark saw in this guy, because they weren't sure. So I've always believed in Shelob's talent ability, even more so than, like I said, not like forget around the league, but also even within the organization. I just think that some of the hype that comes with a playoff run like this can be a little overdone. Like, honestly, I was talking with the guys on the morning show on Monday. There are a lot of guys that win the Calder Cup and are our Calder Cup MVPs and clear waivers the next year, right? Like, that's just the reality. So I'm not ready to go to extremes with this, but it's impressive. It's positive all the way around. It's a good thing. Maybe there are things that have changed that will allow him to translate it to the NHL. I still have a tough time believing, given how last year went, that they're going to go into this upcoming season with the stakes they have and the intentions they have to compete and have him as one of their two guys. It's just really hard for me to put those two things together. Doesn't diminish what he's doing in any way, shape, or form. This is a guy who lost 2 years of development to the pandemic once, and frankly, poor planning in terms of finding him a place to play in the second year. So he's playing a little catch-up in the games played department. These are all positives for Archer Shelovs and the Vancouver Canucks. But I still don't think, and listen, I doubted myself on this, so I asked around a bunch over the last 24 hours, bunch of different goalie coaches at both the AHL and NHL level about him getting through waivers. And sure, someone could claim him. There is an athletic package that some people like, but most thought it was highly unlikely, just because if you claim him, that means you intend to keep him in the National Hockey League. And barring injuries and them waiting too late to send him down to the minors next year, how many teams are going to start the season and go through that first waiver wire claim without what they think are two better options in the NHL? Because if you claim him, you got to keep him. That's part of the math.
Outside of the actual results, are you noticing like any progression in some of the things that ailed him at the beginning of the year, that there's been any level of progress? So you see, okay, this is somewhat of an improvement.
You know, full disclosure, I haven't watched all his games in the American Hockey League. I've caught the snippets, some of the highlight reels, and oftentimes the highlight reels are frankly him using his athleticism to recover from mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's not usually the best way to judge a goaltender. But I have, again, since this has become a hot topic and since some of my opinions on it have received some pretty harsh criticism online, I've asked opponents. I've asked guys that have gone up against him in the Stanley Cup playoffs what they're seeing from the staffs of some of the other teams. And I do think there is a little bit of development. There seems to be improvements. And I think we saw it in the Utah game in some of his tracking habits and mechanics. From distance, mid to high range. And listen, hey, the same book exists on Sergei Bobrovsky. Shoot, it's not about where you shoot on him. It's about where you shoot from on the ice, and you're better to go from face-off dot and above to the top of the circles, higher in the zone. That's where his tracking is a little more compromised. There's still some of that in Archer's game, but it looks like there's been steps there. Again, we saw it during the regular season, that Utah game in particular, but then the next night out, he wasn't able to replicate it. So if that's something he's progressing through, then more and more reps, especially in pressure situations, because what happens, like back nine on a Sunday, you're making swing changes, the old swing returns at the worst time. If he's able to hold on to some of the things in the pressure of the playoffs, again, that bodes well for changes being stickier moving forward. If you can do them under pressure, that means you've really got them more ingrained.
Well, and it is interesting, though, and maybe I'll take some of the heat off of you. Maybe people can put it on me, because I've been saying similar things. People haven't been getting mad about it, but somebody texted in now and said something along the lines of, it's not a plan losing Shelovs on waivers. You have to get ahead of it. But like the value, I just don't know if it's there, right, Woodley? I know people talk about you have to move one of these guys. You can't rely on Shelovs being the backup next season. He's going to have to show he can do that, which means you have to have some veteran here, even if you do move one of the goalies that you have. Let's say it is Thatcher Demko. But I'm not even sure that Shelovs has great trade value. Like, the Canucks can try to trade him all they want, but because of his wager eligibility issue, like, at best, you're talking about a late-round pick.
Yeah, I kind of agree, Sat, and that's kind of the answer. I mean, okay, I'll be honest with you. One of the NHL people I asked about this, their response was, "Are you serious? Like, are you really asking me this question?" I'm like, "Yeah." The opinions on him vary wildly out there. But I don't think there's a lot of people that are like slam dunk guaranteed NHLer. And one of the pushback elements I got was, he has these runs in these moments where his athleticism comes through. But does that translate in a backup role where he can't sort of get into the rhythm and the timing and the feel that fuels a lot of that style of your game? And so if you're not a backup, you got to be a starter. Like, is it a coincidence that his best hockey was in the playoffs when he went in there every night? Mm-hmm. Now, again, do not diminish his ability to go into high-pressure situations and play his game. Like, that's a lot of guys that never get there, right? Like, that's a remarkable thing and a feather in his cap and one of the reasons that they like him, and they should. But that doesn't mean that there's 31 other teams. And again, all it takes is one. And I didn't talk to all 31 other teams, so I don't know. But the consensus amongst the people I talked to was, you know, if they're smart about when they send him down, barring a lot of injuries around the league that destroy other people's depth charts, mm-hmm. most teams are probably going to go into the season comfortable with their 1 and 2 and not viewing him as a slam dunk upgrade. So is there a risk in losing him, and is that a possibility, and then they'll be critiqued? Absolutely. Does the value of potentially having him as a number 3 option outweigh that risk if the return is only a late round pick? I would argue that's fair too. I would rather have him, the chance of having him as an option, versus giving him away for a sixth or seventh round pick and not run the risk of losing him for nothing.
Yeah, and to be honest, I don't even think you're getting a sixth or a seventh, but we can leave that for now. You have one
I'm
thing
glad
on,
you said it, so yeah, I didn't have
yeah.
to.
Well, just one last thing. I think, like, also, too, as you mentioned, yeah, some teams might be willing to take a flyer on him, but I think it would also be instructive to see, like, okay, what profile of team would actually want to do it? Because you can cast out, like, all the contenders, basically, to say, yeah, well, we're not going to be taking this risk. All the teams that are trying to make this jump, like the Canucks are, to try to be in the playoffs.
It's like a team that has, like, three goalie injuries in camp or something.
Like, it is kind of a very specific scenario of the type of team that would want to do it.
It happens, and if you're worried about the risk, you mitigate it by sending them down early. Like, the year that Toronto lost two goalies on waivers and everyone was, woe is me, people are picking on the Leafs for having great depth at goaltending, I was like, you did it to yourself by waiting to the end of camp to send them down. If you send them down early, nobody had the injuries.
Yeah.
Right? You can always mitigate that. It's not necessarily fair to the player because he doesn't get in as many preseason games, but the reality is you're not really making decisions based on preseason performance of a goaltender anyway. So if you want to play hardball and you want to get him down, you send him early. It's just the reality of it. And then at least you know what you're doing. If you do lose him, you can look at picking somebody else up. So there's lots of different ways this could go. And again, you know, if there's talk and it seems to be a little bit more buzz about the possibility of, I don't know if this means things aren't going well from a negotiation standpoint, but the possibility of moving a Demko, then maybe the math changes on all this. But right now, again, like, this is still a real positive thing, and it feels like we're being forced to sort of put a negative spin on it. I just think people have gotten a little carried away with what it means moving forward. And look at the goalie at the other end of this series right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Remy Poirier is a third-year pro, similar age. His career save percentage of 908 in the American Hockey League is identical to what Artur Shilov has done over the bulk of his play in the regular season in the American Hockey League. Do you think people in Texas and Dallas are losing their minds about, I don't even know if he needs waivers, but about that possibility?
Right. No.
Right? Like, there's just, look at the depth chart, look at the other guys. This is a remarkable run. It could do great things for his confidence, and it could be a great springboard for him going to next season. But let's not start handing out Vezina trophies and Hall of Fame inductions based on it.
Well, you know, and I think that also extends to other players as well that are playing for the Abbotsford Canucks. Like, you know, with the Canucks signing Derek Forbort yesterday, there was a big segment of the fan base saying, well, why sign another veteran getting in the way of these young guys? Just give that ice time to Mancini and DPD and Vilander. And it's, yes, you want to give those guys opportunities. But, like, even a guy like Mancini, he's had a good AHL playoff. But when I talk to some scouts, and they like a lot of the things he's done, but it's like they see the areas of his game that he has to improve to play in the NHL. They're not quite sure he's ready for that yet. So I think there's always a disconnect when you see players perform well at the AHL level, and maybe they forget how hard it is to take that leap. And how often have we seen guys get fast-tracked here, Woodley? And being patient with these guys, I don't think is a problem. And I think they dictate when they're ready. And I know there's a lot of skepticism, and I think it's fair for fans to be critical of the organization and perhaps not have a lot of trust with how things have gone. But it's not like teams want players to fail. Like, they want players to have success and play for them. So if they don't get called up and they don't play, it's not because they have anything against them. It's because they're just not there yet.
Yeah, again, it feels like sort of like the like we somehow we end up putting a, and it's not in, like it becomes a negative conversation about something that's really positive. Like, when was the last time? Like, I can't remember the last time there was a playoff run with their affiliate, right?
Like, it was like the Manitoba Moose, right? Or maybe
Utica.
Utica had one run.
Like, this is a real positive for Manny Malhotra as it is his first year as a head coach at this level, right? For the guys that have contributed at various degrees and in various roles, a lot of them, you know, products of the system, of the improvements we've seen in the development process, the job that Ryan Johnson and the staff has done, and Cammy Granato and that whole staff. Like, there are a ton of positives to this, but it does not have to mean that every single guy is ready for the NHL next season. Like, again, just go through the rosters of recent Calder Cup winning teams. I did it from a goalie perspective. And I'm like, you know, Hunter Shepherd won back-to-back Calder Cups, and he was the MVP in one of them. And he had some time in the NHL. And for one season, he had some success in the NHL. Do you know how many times he's cleared waivers over the last 2 years?
Four.
Consistently. And more than that.
Yeah.
I think it's more than that. So, listen, like, it just, especially with goalies, that's the other thing too, right? Like, you know, a guy like Akira Schmid with Vegas, terrible year in the American Hockey League. Terrible. call him up to Vegas. By the time the playoffs started, he had supplanted Ilya Samsonov as the backup. He has a game that translates to the NHL. He's probably always going to be better, especially behind a good defensive team in the NHL, than he is in the scrambles of the American League. A lot of times in the American League, it's the athleticism that gets you by because it's a game of mistakes, broken plays, and bounces. Whereas in the NHL, it's more controlled, more about reads, more about positioning, more about patience. They're two different games. And right now, Archer Shelov has a game that is translating exceptionally in the American League. Doesn't mean it can translate in the NHL, but it, you know, to assume that it's apples and, you know, it's apples and apples that you're comparing, not apples and oranges, is just, again, it's a leap too far for me. I still think there are things in his game that need to continue to develop, and that's fine. He's 23. Right? Like, we don't even expect guys to hit at this level at this point. They're just starting to become options, and it's okay for him to just be that option and maybe even have another year to continue to take these strides, because I do think there are things that seem to have gotten better under Justin Pogge as the goalie coach this year, and those are positives if you add them into all the other incredible skill set that he brings, including his mindset in big moments that we're seeing right now.
Tim and Nanaimo wants us to ask you, is there a certain number of AHL starts that goalies need to develop into an NHL goalie?
Oh, that's a really good question, Tim. I don't have a number myself. I can tell you without telling the organization, there are some organizations that believe it's in the, I believe it's 200. Some of them like to see that, 200 games played. And I don't know if that just has to be the AHL or if that's, you know, a marker they use ECHL too, because increasingly that's where guys start their development path as goaltenders, like even, you know, even touted guys, like where Ty Young started his development path in the ECHL. So 200 pro games is, you know, not definitive by any means, but something I've heard thrown around by other organizations is sort of a, you need at least this many before we can really try and figure out what you are and before we think you might have a chance to be ready.
And Woodley, you know, moving off of, you know, the Canucks stuff and the AHL development stuff, I wanted to get your take on the Cup final. What do you think is going to happen here between the Oilers and the Stars? And based on goaltending, based on how the two teams play, who do you think has the edge?
Well, I would be placing bets if I knew, right? Because then I'd just retire.
Yeah.
I'd secretly trade the Hyundai in for a bet. No, I would never do that. No. Because they're such great cars. Also, it's not my car. I mean, at the end of the day, we don't know. I do think that last year they had a scouting report on Sergei Bobrovsky in Edmonton, and frankly, they ignored it for the first two games. Like, they created looks, and then they tried to do things like beat him along the ice, which is like, no, that's not how you do it.
Right.
This guy is exceptional. He has the ability to make momentum-changing saves if you don't target his relative weaknesses. The Panthers are a great team. They don't give up a ton. When they do, they've got a goalie who sort of his strengths fit their system and style of play. You're only going to get so many looks. Do not feed them into his strengths. And they did that for the first two games, and they helped him build confidence before they finally start. I know, like I was told that there was a very visible level of frustration amongst those who had created the scouting report, especially after game one, because they basically ignored it. I think you saw as that series went on, they learned some of those lessons. They got to Bob. Now, Bob is still capable of stealing games. And game seven, I don't know if they necessarily had to steal it, but he was at his best. And so it is not an easy task to beat Sergei Bobrovsky when he's at his best. At times it can feel impossible. What you can't do is feed into his strengths when you do get your looks and give him even more confidence. And I think the Oilers probably learned enough from that last year that they'll be able to go after him in a different way early in the series. And for the sake of, you know, a cup back in Canada, hopefully not feed into the confidence and fall behind 3-0. I think it's going to be tight, but I do think, much like the past sort of years that we've had a repeat cup final, it will be the team that lost last time that comes out on top this time.
So per the numbers you like to look at, which team is defending better to give their goalie a chance at success? Because I know you've talked a lot about the way the Oilers defend off the rush to help Stuart Skinner. But right now, which team is executing their plan better?
Oh, I don't have my computer up to give you just like the easiest way to do that would be like, what's the expected save percentage of this
right
guy? Right. Like, who has the highest one? And I just don't have my computer up to do that, Bick. But that is a big part of it, right? We've talked about the Oilers, that first two games where they just bled chances off the rush and Stuart Skinner got lit. The last seven games now, so the last two against Vegas and the five series against Dallas, 10 high danger chances off the rush total, and six of them were in game one against Dallas. They have totally negated that, and they've done it against Dallas and Vegas, two of the best rush teams in the league. The difference, Florida's not a rush team. We all know they're a dump and chase team, but what they do with their forecheck pressure and their backcheck pressure is they turn pucks over even in zone. They force turnovers in zone or just outside of the blue line and regroup quickly enough that it may not sound, it may not read like a rush, it may not get recorded as a rush, but it's just like a rush chance. And so that's something the Oilers are going to have to be very cognizant of. It may not be your prototypical breakout, get down the ice, clean rush chance, but for a goalie, they're coming downhill at you, and it feels just like a rush chance. They're going to have to be very careful and manage the puck carefully coming out of their own end and cleanly, because the chances that Florida creates off the rush are not the ones we think of.
Woodley, great stuff as always. Before we let you go, Gary Bettman today was asked about the CBA, and he said they're in really good shape, and it looks like, and he says there's no comparison between this one and the previous negotiations. I can't believe that we might have a new CBA without a fight. It's been like 20 years.
I'll take it though, because I really disliked being out of work. That was not one of my favorite things. So I'll take it.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's just one of those things, man. Like, it's just relief more than anything else, and hopefully that holds. But
listen, if we were covering the Oilers, I hate to say this, if we were covering the Oilers and we're like long cup runs every year, because I've seen how those. Hey, I used to cover a team that used to go on long cup runs. You know, at least, and those are exhausting. So right. If one of those teams, the writers might be like, yeah, like, let's just have a quick little CBA timeout. But the rest of us, we enjoy employment.
Yes, it's much better. And especially with how boring the talk can be when it's not about actually, it's about dollars and cents. Nobody cares about that.
But a lot of HHR talk.
Exactly. Thanks, Kevin.
Take care, guys.
That is Kevin Woodley on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit their showroom on King George and White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com. And we'll talk about that a bit more on the other side, perhaps. But Gary Bettman, the State of the Union ahead of the Stanley Cup Final. Game one happens tonight, of course, Oilers and Florida Panthers. And the best news to me is, you know, him saying that, hey, they're
labor
in good shape.
Progress.
But there's no reason to, right? Sure, we can always talk about things can get better. I know contract lengths we can talk about and certain things that you can always nitpick at, but there's no reason for the NHL to go on strike because teams are doing fine.
They've got multiple TV deals signed in both countries. Franchise values are, to be honest, skyrocketing really fast, and they're making sales as well. They're talking about more expansion at some stage too.
Yeah.
They're coming off the heels of this international tournament with the Olympics as the next backdrop. Like, a lot of things are trending in the right direction. Why screw it up over nitpicking over certain things?
Yeah, and you know what? I will say, I do fear that with the way expansion is going, we're going to be at 34 teams, that that they may be expanding too much, and at some point they'll have to, you know, contract again.
From the outside, we can have that conversation, yes. But if you're like, talking about dollars and cents and what's good for the overall financial health of the league, they're going to view that as a positive.
Yeah, they're going to keep blowing that bubble up until it bursts, right? They're going to keep going as far as they can. The thing about it that is encouraging, again, like, no team is losing money anymore, really.
That's
like,
the thing.
There are teams that could lose money, but it comes down to, like, how much are you budgeting? If you stay within the cap, like, you can make money. There's no more Arizona anymore. I know Winnipeg's kind of at its max, but they're having success. Vancouver was missing the playoffs and making money hand over fist still. Like, teams aren't poor in the NHL anymore. There are teams that make less money, but it comes down to, if you want to be capped out, some teams may have to have internal budgets, so to speak. That's going to become the big thing, I think, as a cap starts rising. But there's no reason to stop work because it's not working anymore, right? There's no reason for it.
And they don't have problem franchises anymore, as you mentioned. Arizona, like, of course, hey, can the Buffaloes of the world compete better? Of course, but it's not a financial issue of why Buffalo is struggling. It's a process issue, which there was a great piece the other day Matthew Fairburn wrote about all the things that's happening in Buffalo. It's like there's issues, but they're all solvable issues. They're not necessarily league-created issues like the Arizona thing was. So it's in a pretty healthy spot. why screw with it?
Yeah, so it's good to hear, because we heard from the PA side, good to hear from Gary Bettman, that things look very positive from that standpoint. One more year left on the CBA, and no more work stoppages. And he had more things to say, so we'll break down what else kind of was newsworthy from the State of the Union on the other side, and we'll get to some other stuff, plus overflow from some really good over-under suggestions and some of the topics we were discussing before. So keep getting your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll hit your questions and your comments as the show goes on. And the Sportsnet 650 Jays Care 50-50 is now live. You could win half the jackpot, and the other half supports Challenger Baseball, a program that helps kids of all abilities across BC thrive through sport. Tickets start at just $10 with bundles for even more chances to win. Don't wait. Get your tickets now at jayscaregolf.rafflenexus.com. Must be 19 years or older and live in BC to play. Let's make a big impact together. More next on the Home of Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.